Off the Ball Rugby.
The story is it's because it's his son, but if it was whatever, Owen O'Brien, with that experience, it's his fourth Lions tour. He does it. This is meat and drink to him.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The League of Ireland Pod
on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the refreshingly alcohol-free Rockshore 00. Get the facts, be drink aware. Visit drinkaware.ie.
Yes, hello to you and welcome to another League of Ireland pod on Off the Ball. Stephen Doyle here with you again this week and next week while Nathan Murphy's off on his holidays. But we're getting a grand bit of sunshine here in the capital city and hopefully wherever you are in the country. Vinnie Perth and Gareth McGlynn are with us this week. Getting a bit of sunshine, gentlemen.
No, yeah, all is good.
That man's always getting sunshine. He's in Spain. I'm up in the Northwest Ireland, Donegal, and it is overcast. Send some sun my way, please.
That is a shame.
Hey, Steve, how old are you today, by the way?
How
old are you today?
Listen, I wasn't... Okay, we better tell the listeners. I wasn't dropping this in just as a hint here, you know, and to be fair, everybody forgets my birthday. Gianluca Vialli and Gary Kelly as well, also on the birthday list for today. So two of the greats of football and myself. Sylvester Stallone, I think. Anyway, listen, the plan was today, I'm working tonight at the Shelburne Linfield game, and I was thinking, okay, don't have a day off, but I've got a nice few hours there. I'll drop the little fella off at the creche. I'll go down to the gym, maybe do a little bit of exercise. And then I booked a cinema ticket. I know it's a sunny day and all that, but I never get to go to the cinema anymore. Like, once you have kids, that's it, isn't it, lads? And I was like, grand, I'm going to get a load of junk food. I'm going to sit there and watch it. I was going to go see 28 Years Later. But here I am, stuck with you two fellas for the next hour or so. And listen... It's not
more
a bad
than 28 years later, by the way. You're a little bit older than 28.
That is
for
sure.
That's what happens when you get older, Stevie. You start forgetting a few things, you know?
What was the old line in the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory? I'm about the same age as my eyes and a little bit older than my teeth. Well, listen, lads, and I should say as well, of course, our League of Ireland pod on Off the Ball is brought to you by Rockshore 00. Refreshingly alcohol-free. Free, always be drink aware. Get the facts. And check drinkaware.ie. So listen, lads, it's going to be a slightly tapered fixture list in the Premier Division this weekend because of the teams playing in Europe. So listen, this might be a little bit outdated by the time some of our podcast listeners get to it, but we can't let it pass without touching on the European games this week. And as I have mentioned already, Shelburne playing tonight against Linfield. It was interesting listening to the comments of the Linfield manager, David Healy, last night. And he was kind of, what would you say, maybe just playing down the fact that it's an all-Ireland clash. He was saying, look, we're just here to represent Linfield. We want to get through. There's a lot of finance or a lot of money at stake here in this particular tie as well. But Vinny, come on. I'd say some of those players in the Linfield dressing room are thinking, let's take these League of Ireland lads down a peg or two.
Yeah, there's no doubt there'd be an element of rivalry to it. You've got this sort of north-south divide, for want of a better word. You've got the history of Linfield. It's a fantastic club, what they do up there and how they do it. They've come off a little bit in terms of the fan base recently. I will say, I've been to a couple of games over the last year or two, and there's not as many people there. Like, you look at the surge in attendance in League of Ireland, they're probably a little bit jealous up there in terms of the growth we're having at the moment. But it's a mouth-watering tie. Absolutely fantastic opportunity for both teams. And I think the winner of this tie has a real chance of being in group stage Conference League football. So for that alone, feels like it's nigh on £1 million, potentially £1 million game for winner. So it would be really important to both clubs. So... yeah, look, it is just set up to be a brilliant tie. Obviously, Shelburne will be just about slight favourites, but I think you're right, this Linfield team off at your peril, and it will be a fascinating night, I have to say.
Yeah, just I'm going to get your thoughts on the game in a minute, Gareth. It is interesting what Finney says there about the crowd drop off a bit in the Northern Irish Football League. Healy did reference in his press conference yesterday that he was maybe slightly envious of the crowds going to matches here. He says he goes to the FAI Cup final every year. He can't remember the last time he hasn't been at one. And he thinks that the promotion of the game down here is so much better than it is in their division or in their leagues. Is that something you'd be aware of yourself?
Me, Steve-O?
Yeah, I know. So, like, just because you'd be a bit more closer to things around the Irish League.
I mean, you saw it whenever Tiernan came to Derry. There's no doubt about it. David Healy would have been interested in the jobs that were going to the League of Ireland over the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, he's done an unbelievable job with Linfield over the last 5 or 6 years. Everybody thinks because Linfield is historically has won the most honours that they have the highest budget in the league. That's not always the case. They can't always offer the most money. So they've got to attract players by saying, listen, we're going to contend. We're going to possibly win the league and possibly a cup. So he's got that contend with, but there's no doubt about it. I actually thought when Pat Fenlon went to Bowes, I thought the David Healy kind of relationship with Pat may have been something that they wanted to rekindle before Alan Reynolds went in there. So obviously that hasn't happened. He's speaking now so highly of the league. I think he would jump at the chance the same way that Tiernan Lynch did at Derry to get back into the league. I mean, it's you can see it even in the newspapers, the national newspapers. It's touched on now in the newspapers up here way more than the Irish League is, the League of Ireland. And it's just because of, A, the calibre of people, the calibre of attendances, just the whole noise around the league. Everybody wants a piece of it. And listen, the Irish League clubs are the same, whether you're a manager or you're a player. You're looking up at the League of Ireland and saying, that's a step up. And I think we're going to see that, to be honest with you, again, when you see Linfield against Shelburne. The one thing that will slightly, I know it's a small thing, might go in Linfield's favour is the size of the pitch had to be brought in quite drastically. So that'll contain the pitch a little bit more. So it won't be as big, because there's no doubt about it, Shelburne will be much the fitter team.
Okay, but you see, I do take that point, because Shelburne definitely have the advantage being mid-season, Gareth, and Linfield, of course, still getting ready for their new season. But the fact, like, Linfield play on a big pitch themselves, you know, they play in a very expansive pitch. So is that maybe, could it be a disadvantage? I just wonder, is that maybe being played up too much?
So the Shells pitch is coming in a bit, but no, it's a disadvantage. Linfield haven't played in such a big pitch. And it's kind of because it's such an unbelievable stadium, Windsor Park, it actually takes away from going to somewhere where it's a little bit gritty. So I think it'll be up to their advantage. We saw that against Shamrock Rovers and Larne. I mean, the pitch was huge. Shamrock Rovers just ran over the top of Larne. Athletes. Again, it comes back to the full-time thing, being full-time for so long, whether it be nutrition, whether it be strength and conditioning. They're more athletic in our league, so they can run harder for longer. You know, it does play into it.
Yeah, Vinny, just with that in mind about the pitch dimensions, I suppose, the difference in fitness between the two sides, how do you think Joey O'Brien's going to set up here? Because actually, I spoke to Stewie Byrne here yesterday, and he was a little bit concerned going into the game just because of Shelburne's form. We were kind of talking about all the messing around with formation, different players in different positions, Mark Coyle being pulled around the place. Does he need to just go back to the old back four, or do you think he's going to go with a back three in the match against Linfield?
Oh, I'd go back to the back four, but I would have done that earlier on in the year. I think that's down to partly, my view is that's down to partly to where Shells are struggling a little bit at the moment. I think the benefits is, I take Stewie's point and people's point around Shells' form. I think by and large they've played okay at different stages. They haven't put the ball in the back net, and that's down to different reasons, and also conceded too many goals. But when you look at I think they got the perfect game, unfortunately, for Cork City. They got the perfect game the other night. I think Harry Wood has been exceptional for Charles over the last sort of number of weeks. Ali Coote has done really well for them as well. And then, obviously, he had Meepo, who was a real threat. Missed an easy enough chance, but also scored a really good goal. So I think going forward, you have a lot to like about them. In terms of Evan Caffrey down that sort of right-hand side, Harry Wood, Coote, all the attack and flair. The challenge for Shelburne is, can they keep a clean sheet at the moment and not giving Linfield any hope as they head up to Windsor Park? So these games are different now. European football is completely different. It will only be halftime. That won't be a cliche. There's no away goals anymore. So they can be brave, and Joey has to be brave with this team, and he has to get the best out of. If Harry Wood plays really, really well tonight and Ali Coote, I think they can be the game changers for them. Not necessarily they're the ones that will score the goals, but I think they're the ones turning up in different pockets. And we talk about Linfield's fitness. I don't think it'd be as bad as we all expect. they've been full time for a while, but that little popping up in different areas and having to react to it and constantly moving and running and getting after people will be the challenge for them. And obviously, Linfield are missing have a big blow when Chris Shields is suspended tonight. His know how and different bits and pieces is a loss to them. So, Charles are favourites, as I said, but there's not a lot in it. And it's up to the top players in the higher end of the pitch to make it work for Joey O'Brien. Feels like they're going to stick with a back three. I'd like them to come away from that, but that's just my view.
Yeah, and as well, Steve, just before we forget, let's not forget that they lost Joel Cooper in the off-season. He was a massive, massive reason that they've been so successful over the last 3 years. He is just a threat, whether Linfield are home or away, have the ball or don't have the ball, he's always a goal threat. So having lost him is a big, big blow to them.
Just the interesting thing about this as well is something that's been on my own mind. Like, this essentially is a derby match. I think the two sets of players will go in and approach this like a derby match. Now, if that was a derby match in the Premier Division or in the Premiership, the referee would be well aware of that and they might referee it differently. They might let a few hard tackles go. But if the players do approach this like a derby match, and you'd expect the likes of Mark Coyle, Kerr McEnroy, the central midfielders for Shelburne, JJ Lunny as well, they'll be going in hard. They want to make a mark in the game. They want to tell these Linfield players, this is my patch, I own this pitch and you're not getting anywhere here, and they're going to put in hard tackles. But they're going to need to be careful here, because it's the UEFA competition and the referee may not be aware of that kind of derby feel to this game, Vinny.
I think the difference now is, I should have checked, what you do in the build-up to European games is okay. I should have done it for you here. But basically, watch how the referee... That is what Shells should have done and Linfield should do, is they watch how the referee manages the games previously. So this is all part of your European sort of... You can't leave any stone unturned at this level, particularly what's at stake for it. So both teams should know who the referee is. Obviously, they will. What country's from? What's the style of refereeing? Does he give penalties for people dragging out of each other in the box? If he does, then you don't drag out of anyone, for argument's sake. But it's a point well made. European football is completely different in terms of the refereeing. Particularly up the north, it can be very, very physical. The game can be. And down here, our referees are a lot closer. They try and chase European standards, our referees. So they would tend to manage the game a little bit more like a European sort of standard refereeing that we've come up against. So
I'm going to check him here, Vinny, because I've excuse me, I just checked. It's the name of the referee, I just checked while you were chatting there. Luis Godinho is his name, and he's from Portugal. And just looking quickly here through his record, Europa League, Michelin Fenerbahce, 3 yellow cards. Europa Conference League, Jagiellonia against Ljubljana, 7 yellow cards. Nations League, Northern Ireland against Belarus up in Windsor Park, 5 yellow cards. So, and look at his Portuguese league record is really off the charts. There's one game there with 10 yellow cards, 7 yellows and a red between Sporting and Braga. Braga and Porto, 6 yellows and 1 red. So, you know, I'd imagine this fella could dish out a few cards here tonight.
Yeah, so someone on your management team has to have a look at that before the game and speak to the players. Because we're in that level of detail. That's the fine, minute detail that has to go right for you if you're going to be successful in Europe. And the Portuguese league, even off the top of your head, if you think about it, you wouldn't expect loads of contact. Compare that to Northern Ireland football, as I said, or the football we play in the south here. It's a little bit more contact. So... But the referees do watch some videos of Linfield, and they'll watch videos of Shelburne as well in preparation for it. So they be prepared, but it's just another box you've got to tick in your preparation.
Yeah, and I think Steve-O, that the onus will be on Linfield to try and disrupt Shelburne being the away team. I think they will be more physical. And between the two leagues, there's no doubt about it, over the last 4 or 5 years, the Northern Irish League is way more physical than the League of Ireland. The League of Ireland is slightly more technical. So I would imagine that if anybody's going to be a little bit worried, it'll be Linfield. I mean, Joey O'Brien, even under Damien Duff, Shelburne didn't have a bad disciplinary record. So I think they should be fine.
And listen, lads, former players yourselves, the crowd has a huge part for Shelburne tonight and St. Patrick's Athletic when they play in Inchicore. And we'll talk about the other games when they do come up. But they play a massive part, don't they, tonight?
Yeah, huge. Can you just say, like, Shelbourne Football Club are entering into Champions League football tonight. They're representing Ireland in the Champions League. The players should be extremely proud. It's a result of all the hard work of last year. Other clubs and other supporters don't like other teams doing well because of financial rewards, etc., etc. But as a player, as a coach, Europe is the most proudest moment you'll have. Gareth will tell you that as a player, as a coach, it's probably the highlight of my career, winning a Champions League game. It's the same competition that ultimately rocked around later on in the year to his Champions League final. You've entered the same competition, albeit it's early stages, but it is such a proud moment for players, and fans of that club have to make it special, because it is special to the players, and it's important that I know there'll be some restrictions to Talker Park tonight because of, you know, UEFA regulations. It was important that whether it's in Richmond Park, where Pats have a great record in European games recently, or Talker, fans get behind them, because this is the most special time of your career.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll tell you one thing, the Riverside, when it's rocking, is one of the best atmospheres in the league. So best luck to Shells and everyone there. And to St. Pat's as well this week. I have to say, Gareth, we were all concerned maybe about St. Patrick's Athletic going into their tie this week. But I was at the game on Friday commentating for Off the Ball, the Bohemians match away to St. Pat's. And I thought there was, you know, there was reason to be optimistic there, because obviously they're still managing Chris Forrester back into the team. I just wonder, is he being held back for this European tie? But I thought Barry Bagley did really well. He's been criticised a little bit this season, but I thought he played really well. I thought out wide, Jake Mullaney was very good for them as well. Gravosti and Redmond played pretty solidly at centre-back. So, look, with all the gloom and doom that there's been around St. Pat's over the last number of weeks, I think they'll be pretty happy with that performance going into Europe this week.
Yeah, and I said it, I think it was last week as well, when Derry beat them 1-0 with that great counter-attack goal, I thought Pats were very good. I thought Simon Power's running pace, I wasn't the quickest, but I would hate to be playing against him at any level. And I think you mentioned there the players as well, Steve-O. I think the players that Stephen has assembled are more suited to playing in Europe. They're more technical, they'll have more time on the ball, and they'll be able to spread about a bit. Now, the question is always the balance of those technical players and the real graft. Afters, you need to disrupt other teams. But I think I do not see St. Pat's going into the European match without just haven't been free, because in the league it hasn't gone well. They're getting kind of a little bit of criticism. The manager's under a little bit of criticism, not too much pressure, but criticism in the results and the league position. It hasn't gone as well as the end of last season's gone. But remember, last year Europe was the catalyst. That's when the players went down, played in Europe, had a bit of freedom, and then that continued into the league form. So that's exactly what Stephen will be looking for. You saw that goal Simon Power scored against Bowes. It was disallowed. Looks onside.
Way onside, Gareth. It was onside, wasn't it? That was shocking.
You can never be sure with a camera angle, but you're right. He was at least a yard when the ball was passed from the camera angle. But against Derry, he had four separate occasions that exact time. And every time he was a yard ahead of the defender. And had he have just timed his run, because he doesn't need to, he can give the defender 4 yards if he wants. He's that quick. So he's obviously learned from it. It should have stood. So the likes of him will gain a bit of confidence from that. And I'm expecting Pats to do well in that tie.
One question on, I was at a different game, Steve, and one thing you don't pick up, but Barry Bagley, it was interesting. I thought he played a little bit deeper when I was watching this game back. And that gave them, with him and Lennon as a two, gave them a bit more solidity in midfield, something I think they've been lacking over the last couple of weeks. Would that be fair?
Yeah, absolutely, because I thought Bagley was, as you say, he was deeper, and he certainly got involved. He won the ball back for them a few times. He was kind of breaking up play and that kind of thing, but his passing was really good as well. He just looked really, it was almost like he was reinvigorated. And I just wonder if Stephen Kenny had a word with him, but himself and Lennon were really, really good alongside each other. I think that's 4 appearances off the bench now for Chris Forrester, Vinny, since he's come back from injury. Do you think it is the case that Kenny might have been holding him back for Europe, just not taking the risk with him?
I don't know, because then you're throwing him into big games. So it feels like if Chris was ready, he may have played before now, or certainly started. Because it feels like Pats need a result. I understand the criticism of the fans, and it's a bit like But like you're saying, they played well the other day. It to a point, the draw was probably a fair result. Albeit that goal was disallowed, but they've got stuff go their way earlier on in the season. I remember a couple of instances. They've had a little bit of bad luck. You can't get away from that. You just feel for them a little bit. You feel like they need a bit of a rub of the green, but they're not scoring enough goals. They're not looking like scoring enough goals. And they haven't been solid at the back. The top players, like we all would put Joe Redmond as our best centre half or up there with, in the top two or three of the league. And he's been okay, but just okay by his standards. So there's a lot to fix there. And I don't think it's just Chris Forrester, but I think Chris Forrester in the midfield is a huge part of that because, like I said, Bagley playing a little bit deeper there. Chris naturally does that. He makes them tick and makes them play. But he doesn't go beyond the number 10 too often or vacate that area. And that just makes them a little bit more solid. So he's usually important. The risk to throw him in, he hasn't started games. They can't afford Chris to get injured again between now and the end of the season because they need a good run towards getting back into Europe. At the same time, Europe only comes once every so often for teams and they've got to show their best foot in Europe.
Yeah, and look, we know Stephen Kenny is so good in these ties as a manager. I thought Mulroney, one of the most impressive things about him the other night was, look, because we know he's two-footed, really, he was either beating the fullback down the right-hand side or as he was cutting in on his left foot to maybe have a shot or pick out a player in a better position. But I think they need to find a way that Mulroney can get to the end line and then pick out either Keane or Amelia, whoever the striker is, get them to the near post a bit more because Mulroney, as we know, can deliver the ball so, so well. But like from an attacking point of view, that's fine. Defensively, they're going to have to be honest, Gareth, because this crowd, Hegelman from Lithuania, they're really impressive from a goal scoring point of view. Just looking at their recent results, they got, was it 5 goals at the weekend there? So look, yeah, 5-2 they won in their last match. So they're obviously, you know, as well midway through their season, so there's no real advantage there. So defensively, Pats are going to have to be sharp in this particular game.
Yeah, 100%. And Joe Redmond's going to have an outstanding game because he is the catalyst in there. He's the leader. He's the organizer. I have to say, McClelland was very good when I watched him live 3 times this year. He is excellent. His distribution up the left-hand side, whether it's Mulroney, Power, Zach Elvizetti, no matter who's playing in front of him, and then into the striker as well, is very good. Defensively, he's gotten better. He's not going forward as much. I know that Vinny mentioned a few times about that indecision on who the best fullback partnership is. And I think McLaughlin's coming back to some good form as well. So Stephen will be delighted with that. So it's a settled back 5, if you like, with the goalkeeper. I think what you're saying there is if he keeps the 2 sixes there, that may have been in preparation from Europe. And Kane Levy, we can talk about the defence all you want, right?
Yeah.
But it's all about how easy the players get up and get at your defence. I mean, Derry didn't really get at them when I watched them live. I was watching the Bows match. Bows didn't really get at their back 4 just because they had a bit of protection. And I think Levy there in front of the 2 sitting midfielders, he's better out of possession than the likes of Brandon Kavanagh, who is far more offensive. So it's not just on the back 5, it's the players in front of them giving them a dig out and making sure that the team just works a little bit harder getting at the back 4.
Yeah, and just to touch on this game real quickly, Sibo, I think the guys from Lithuania, like, they're a young enough squad. A lot of players, they obviously have a couple of experienced players. A lot of players, 21, 22, 23, 24, younger age. Like all these teams you come against, whether it's from Latvia or Lithuania, there's always a Brazilian or two in the squad. Their left winger looks like a Brazilian, bit of a flyer. They're very strong defensively, albeit their goal difference is +5 at the moment. Pat is only 0. Who would have thought that? You know, after 19 games, they're +5. So there's not a lot in it on paper, but Pats look like they probably are favourites in this tie. But they're playing against a young, fit, hungry team. I think there was a time where all of these games were 50-50. Then it swung a little bit where the Irish sides were getting through the first round quite comfortably, but we're starting to see it's harder to get through that fourth round because the gulf is getting a little bit smaller. And like that, if I was doing a report on the Lithuanian side for tomorrow, I know all of the details on them, where the players play, how they play, whether he likes to cross with right foot, left foot, all of these things. But they're able to do that same thing now as well. So it's getting a little bit tighter down the sort of lower levels of European football. So don't be shocked if this team turn up and make it really difficult for Pats.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to watch on Thursday night. So, look, as I said, we were touching the European games. We've discussed them a lot. I want to maybe talk next, lads, about Sligo Rovers, because I went to see Dublin get hammered on Saturday night at Croke Park, and very depressed Steve. I was coming home on the bus watching Sligo Rovers and Shamrock Rovers on LOI TV. I thought it was a brilliant game at first. Really, really good quality match. Both sides play some good football. Shamrock Rovers showing some great character coming from a 2-0 down. But listen, will Sligo Rovers, Gareth, do you think, be too disappointed with that result, considering that they were two goals up, but to get a draw against a team that are top of the table?
No, I don't think so. I think they'd be more than happier, or John Russell will definitely be happier in the first half performance. I mean, they were on the front foot. And I think I love that about John Russell. And I think that's why he's able to recruit and get the likes of O'Kane and McManus and Power previously. The players look at his playing style and his coaching style and go, you know what? And I'm thinking, if I was a 19, 20-year-old on the bench for Bows, Pats, Derry, Shells, Rovers, and John Russell came knocking and said, come on up here and play for a year and see how you get on. You won't be guaranteed a starting position, but with the quality you have, you'll get more opportunity in your current club. You would jump at the chance. The way they play, and we talked about McManus last week a little bit, he's going to be an added addition to what they've been good at, and kind of linking that defence to forward. And we've seen that in the Bundes in the first 45 minutes. Listen, against Rovers, you know what you're going to get. You're going to have to be off the ball, defensively solid at certain periods of the game. And that's exactly what Sligo does. Don't get me wrong, the Sligo keeper played very well, and he made some unbelievable saves. But I think Sligo and Shamrock Rovers will both turn around and say, you know what, that's probably a fair result. But loads of confidence taken from the game. And again, the league leaders, the team that won four of the last five, you take a point at home all day long.
Yeah. Yeah, the only thing to add to that is Sargent's double save was brilliant at one stage. I think it was from Danny Grant, the back post. Adiki done really well. Don't get me wrong, them two great goals. And then Rovers sort of took over. But that chance at the end for Francis Lovato, I mean, you do feel you're coming into the dressing room almost disappointed. It looked an amazing atmosphere in the showgrounds, and I was watching on TV on Saturday night. Great atmosphere. The two goals early really helped them. Well, could you imagine the showgrounds if Lovato had a chipped goalkeeper? It would have went mental there. It would have been a great occasion. So there's probably a little bit of feeling of we let one go a little bit just because of that. But ultimately, it's a really good result for them. But yeah, and particularly to chip McGinty at that end, it would have been
that would have been icing on the cake. Hey, but can you imagine the adrenaline that's going through his head when he's going through? He knows that it's going to be probably the last big chance, and he's just overcooked it.
And Kabir, Vinny, from a coaching perspective, if something like that, like if you've got Lombardo in your team and he's done that, what do you do over the week then after that?
In terms of what, to him?
Do you work with him? Do you work with him and say, look, this is what you need to do in those situations?
Yeah, there's probably a lack of calmness in that finish. Like, if you've done that training, to be fair, Steve, we've probably chipped the keeper, you know, 9 times out of 10. The difference is in match, in the heat of the battle, you know, and that's where you've got to replicate as much as you can. There's a lazy old saying, train hard, play easy. And what that means is, whether it's a five-a-side and a fella chips one over the bar like that, then you don't accept that as a standard. And I go back to my coaching time, under Stephen Kenny, and we've done a lot of five-a-sides. There wasn't a lot of this sort of loads of phases of play. We obviously done that to a high level, but on that sort of Monday and Tuesday, it was about training really hard under high intensity, and then those chances come to you in a match, and they're a bit easier because you've done them already. And ultimately, that's how you coach fellas, because you can't replicate that in-game to the same level that's required. So it just needed him a little bit of calmness. And he's so much time to take it down or go around the keeper, or just the quality in his finish. And it was game, set, match, and the showgrounds would have went, you know, off the charts.
I heard a few former players talking about Owen Heary back in the day, GMAC, about his training sessions when he was a player. And he'd be going in almost full strip, shorts, socks, shin pads, boots, everything done up as if he would be on a match day.
studs about that size, Steve-O, and this, and it's a day like today. It hasn't rained in 4 weeks, and he's got studs that size. I've got the marks to prove it at in 2010. But again, just what Vanny said there, he set standards. I mean, Owen Heary's one of the most decorated players in the league. He set standards, and he did the same thing in training. Every day as a match, there was no up and down. It was guaranteed. And that's why he was so consistent in many matches he won, many man of the matches he won, trophies, you name it.
He wasn't that good. Sure, he only won something like 9 league trophies, was it?
he's no Sean Gannon.
No, I'm not sure.
Listen, lads, Sligo Rovers are at home again this week on Saturday against Derry City. And before we let GMAC get carried away with the candy stripes, Vinny, how many players would you say have been on a hat-trick in a match and yet still loses by 5 goals? Poor Gavins. Must be good.
Well, I'll tell you something. You talked about Lombardo there now, right, and composure. Parag Amond, I watched the game. He had 2 sniffs. They weren't even chances. And he scored 2 goals. The man is incredible. I talked about him last year. The amount of Friday, Monday games he played at his age is unbelievable. And he didn't have many chances the other night. I mean, you see there, he was on a hat trick. Honestly, he had 2 half chances or 2 chances in the match and he buried the 2 of them. He's unbelievable.
So Gareth is going to wax lyrical about Derry. So I'll play devil's advocate for a second, right? First of all, I'll steal his thunder. Michael Duffy's performance the other night, Steve-O, was off the charts. It was sensational. I think...
I'm going to have a go at you. You're like every Dublin media person at the minute saying about Michael Duffy. You watched one game. You haven't been watching him for the last 8 or 9 games live. The amount of work he has put through. Markey got player of the month. I don't know what month it was. It was a disgrace. Michael Duffy was by far and the best player in the league. He has one unbelievable game that he's been doing consistently for since the start of the year. And now he's got player of the month all of a sudden.
Well, it just shows you what you know.
Lazy journalism. Lazy player of the month.
Okay, so just so you know, my understanding is player of the month was voted for nearly a week and a half ago. But anyway, before he played really well last week. So if that suits your narrative, fine. So anyway, we move on real quickly. Michael Duffy was brilliant, right? But can I say 2 things for Gareth before he comes on? Because Derry were exceptional. But there's 2 areas of concern. Parag Amond got 2 easy goals on the night down to bad defending from Derry. And keeper's got to save his 1st goal, Marr. And if you're going to get all the way to win a league title or push Shamrock Rovers, it seems bizarre to have a go off them after winning 7-2. You've just got to cut out all of them, because when they matter, when you don't score 7 goals and you only score 1 or 2, you can't afford defending like that. And your keeper has to make big saves. And Brian Maher is brilliant with his distribution. He's an outstanding, talented young goalkeeper. But he's got to make big one-on-one saves and just keep a clean sheet. And he didn't keep a clean sheet the other night. And it seems bizarre to say that in a 7-2. And I might get criticised for saying it. But I'm just, when the money's on the table, maybe this Saturday night, when they only score 1 goal and 1 bit of brilliance, and they need to keep clean sheets. So between the centre-halves and the goalkeeper, they've got to tune it in. Or else they ain't going to get close to Rovers. If we all want them to get close to Rovers. I want them more than anybody to. But they've got to tidy that up, Gareth.
Yeah. No, listen, we need a title race. There's no doubt about it. The league needs it and it deserves it, especially what went on last year was unbelievable. You're right in the second point. The first point, no. The first point was Brian Maher, not good enough on the goal. Absolutely. He'd be very disappointed. The second one, they're 4 or 5 up. The boys are just switched off. They're not as on it. Winchester has been probably, along with Healy, the best defensive midfielder in the league this year. He has just took his eye off the ball with the organisation. There've been players coming on and off. But I agree with you. At the back, and any time the teams have played 2 up front, against Derry, and I mean 2 up front, I don't mean a 10 and a 9, I mean 2 up front, they found it very difficult. But another thing that people won't be talking about again, especially the lazy journalist that never watched them, a national journalist, is the 2 wing-backs were outstanding. And Vinny, we talked about it as well, and Steve-O, see players, now Waterford played in there a wee bit, running in behind. If you watch all the goals back, Mickey Duffy, right wing-back, left wing-back,
To prove your point, describe the 1st goal, Gareth. I mean, it is what I cry out for. You spoke about Mulroney earlier on, and Steve-O said get to the end line. Sometimes you need a fullback to do that for you, to create a little bit of space, and then the second time the winger does it. Well, describe that fourth goal.
It's amazing looking at the evolution of Derry, right? See, before that, the two wingbacks weren't allowed to move. It was Tiernan Lynch saying, we are not moving. We're going to defend. We're not going to lose games. We're going to win a game 1-0 from a defensive mistake or a set piece. Now he's evolved. And again, it's the players understanding his methods. But the first one, Conley sitting in the middle of the park, he just puts it straight. Now you have to say Waterford. It looked like three pitches in behind their back four at one stage. Ronan Boyce gets down the right hand side, cuts it back to White. White plays it in the Liam Boyce, and he sticks it in the corner. But that was all night. And that's why I talked to you about styles. Waterford suits Derry to play against them. Whenever Drogheda or Galway go into a back five and they're deeper, Derry struggle a little bit, and it's just anybody would struggle because it's much harder to break down. So it was the perfect storm. That game was the perfect storm. I wouldn't read into it too much on Waterford, and I wouldn't read too much into it on Derry as well. It was the perfect storm of players playing well for Derry, Derry hitting the tempo or hitting form at the right time, and Waterford looking a bit all over the place defensively, especially.
And what's important on that, Steve, the coaching element is Boyce is the highest player on the pitch for Derry. Your wing back or your fullback. He was the highest player. So they've come up with all these different formations, and Michael Duffy's played in middle and different things. But Boyce is your highest player. Then all of a sudden, if you think about a back four, Gerard wants to know what the mistake people make up in Derry is probably press a little bit too high and leave space in behind. It's a huge pitch. But because of the centre forwards or Michael Duffy in little pockets in midfield, the Waterford back three decided to go a little bit, press a little bit higher, and just left a little bit of space, and your wing back is in into space. And as Gareth says, gets to the end line, pulls one back. Brilliant ball, slightly behind Boyce. But I tell you what, it's a wonderful finish, isn't it? Like, he just whips it into the
unbelievable. He's got that quality. But Vinny, what I like about that as well, once one goes, the other wing back just tucks in slightly and creates a three in midfield. So they've got the... We talk about Bowes, the rotations that Bowes do. Derry have just got those rotations now going nicely.
Now, this is interesting, Gareth, because I remember around the start of the season, things weren't going so well for Derry City and Tiernan Lynch. He was, you know, as football is nowadays, people were kind of putting the mockers on him. But you were kind of a little bit puzzled. You were kind of saying after a couple of games, I just don't know what they're trying to do. I just don't know what the pattern of play is, the game plan is. Are you more sure now of what Tiernan Lynch and Derry City are actually doing now?
Yeah, and even before this decent run of four wins, there was signs of it, but there was signs of it defensively was excellent. The three, you got to remember, there's five centre-halves playing on the pitch. Ronan Boyce was a centre-half when he was younger. He was then out there right-back. He's now the right wing-back. Sam Todd's a centre-half. He's playing left wing-back, and then you've got the three, and then you've got two defensive midfielders. By the way, I'll touch on it later. Sadio Diallo is the biggest catalyst for the last four wins in a row. He's been unbelievable.
Gareth, I've been saying for years, not years, well, as long as he's been in the league, I think this fella is the best defensive midfielder in the league. I really do. Now, he's had troubles with injuries. He's, you know, had troubles with form and stuff. This fella, I think, is technically brilliant. When you see him on the ball, he's such a good footballer. He's very aggressive. He's very strong, very powerful. And what a pinger he put into the top corner of the other night.
Steve, the counter argument to that is, despite what Gareth thinks, some of us in Dublin do actually watch a lot of matches, right? Diallo is a little bit one of them where he plays really well for two or three games. And he comes off a little bit for one or two games. And then he's really, really good again. You know, so when you catch him, it's like seeing somebody once a month. Oh, he's a brilliant player. And why is the manager not picking him? Well, you didn't see him for the 2 weeks before that. There's a little bit like that with Diallo. Okay. If he went on a consistent run, Gareth's right, I think he would kick on. But he's been a little bit inconsistent at times, Gareth.
Yeah, and I really cut across there, Gareth, because you were going to say he has been the catalyst.
Big time. He was out injured. I think he broke his arm or he fractured his arm down in Sligo. He was going really well. He's a lot fitter this year as well, but he's playing with Winchester, right? Winchester and Diallo were playing there previously. They're too alike. You've got to have one or the other. And that's the problem. Well, not the problem. It's a nice problem to have for a manager. Winchester and Diallo complement each other very, very well. And that box, Winchester does the doggy work. Diallo on the ball is incredible. When Duffy scored the winner up in Shells in Tulka Park, remember the cut on the left foot? Diallo, I give Diallo the man of the match because he was, although Duffy ended up winning the game for him. He was that good. But you mentioned there about Tiernan Lynch and it all kind of coming together. That's what I'm saying to you about the perfect storm. The problem with that now, Steve-O, is there's been a bit of transition in the club and there will be in the next few weeks as well. it's that starting 11 is looking really good. Outside of that, he needs to get more depth, because luckily they're not in Europe. But if they do get a couple of suspensions or a couple of injuries, it could be quite difficult to field a really strong 11. But as I said, do not get carried away. It's a good performance. They're on a good run. They go to Sligo on Saturday. It'll be interesting to see how they react.
But it wasn't that long ago, Steve, or just on Derry, real quickly, is that we were down at Daly Mount Park. Three of us were there, I think, that night.
Yeah.
And they were all over the place. They played five different systems in the 60 minutes. So it's, to be fair to the manager, you need a little bit of time. And even a couple of injuries, of course.
But funny you say that, Vinny. That's a perfect example of what could happen in 3 weeks, because that night there was a load of injuries. People weren't fit. They were carrying knocks. They got injuries throughout the game. That's what I'm talking about. Like, you look at Pats, Bowes, Shamrock Rovers. They get an injury or a suspension, it's like for like.
So just before we move on, we got to give him his flowers, Diallo, for that goal. What was it like, Gareth, being at the Branwell when that absolute shit-pinger, forgive my language, but that's what we call it nowadays. What was it like when that went in? Top corner. Unbelievable.
How many times have you seen it, Steve-O? When the ball's laid back like that, and it was perfect by Duffy, there was very little pace on it, and it was sitting nicely. Do people snatch at it? But you watch him, it's just like a golfer who's got a nice, easy Ernie L swing, and he's just caressed his foot and he hasn't tried to take the leather off it. He's just had the perfect connection, and it's just, it's like Tony Yeboah. But the place was rocking after the first three goals anyway. It was a nice night in the Brandywell, let me tell you.
Absolutely. Well, so look, Derry City going away to Sligo Rovers, like, I'm sure John Russell will be kind of thinking, well, if I get the kind of Derry City that I've been, you know, a little bit out of kilter in other away games, we might fancy our chances here, Vinny.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the difference is, you look at the Rovers game, the performance from Sligo, Elding again, another wonderful pass for Hiddinkee. I think the way they started the game and got the crowd behind them, I think that's important. And I always make the reference that crowds have to play their part as well. It's not every week you're going to score early, but I think Sligo is a really difficult place to go to. Has been. There's obviously a local rivalry element to the two of them clubs to a point, and there'll be a little bit where we're all expecting Derry to go there and win now because we want to see that title race. So that's a little bit of pressure that they've gone under the radar for the last couple of weeks, so that'll be interesting. But for Sligo, recruitment looks good. Players are starting to settle in. As I said, Elding was brilliant again the other day. Hiddinkee got the freedom of the penalty box for the fourth goal, great header. And then his breakaway goal for the second one was exceptional. Like, and it was a really good composed finish from him. So I think he had a great night the other night, but they had a few more options off the bench. And I think that will give John Russell his biggest sort of confidence is looking to your bench. And now you've got players that can make an impact.
So you've got down in the RSC this weekend, the Munster Derby, and we've got two sides going in off the back of bad results. Obviously, Cork City being hammered at Tolka Park 3-1, essentially, and 7-2 defeat for Waterford at the Branwell, which you've already discussed. I just wonder, what does John Coleman do in reaction, Vinny, to that kind of result? What's the week like after that? You know, how do you kind of get your players back on course? And, like, they haven't been playing too badly, but they haven't been kind of, you know, shooting out the lights either. But there have been good signs. Like, I was down there, obviously, doing their game against Bohemians 4 off the ball. And, like, just looking through the lineup at that particular day, like, they've got some good players there, the likes of Darragh Leahy, Grant Horton, you know, Ollie Inca was very, very good. McDonald, we know how good he is. Glenfield, I thought, was very impressive. And, of course, Amon and Lonergan up front. Another player I was very impressed by, Jesse Dempsey, that evening as well, was really, really good. I think he just came off the bench on Friday night. So how does he kind of get their confidence back up again for what is a big, big Munster derby this weekend?
In one sense, I was playing Cork is probably in paper the best sort of thing you can do at home because Cork have been struggling. In another sense, then, that could lead the players into a little bit of, we'll get over the line here, it's only Cork, they're struggling. So they've got to have a few harsh realities after shipping seven goals. Like, I mean, they changed the goalkeeper. I wouldn't have thought the keeper was at fault for many of the goals the other night, to be fair to him. So whether that was injury or not, I'm not sure. But I think you've got to... It, like, in management, he'll know the players better than I do, but a sort of Monday and Tuesday of the start of the week had to be a little bit harsh with players, had to be a little bit of cuff love, a little bit of organisation, sit through the video, watch the goals. For example, you can't do a lot about the Allo's goal other than we weren't tight to him and different bits and pieces. But some really poor defending in some of the other goals, and the way, for example, Duffy ran amok, nobody got a grip to him early in the game. So there'll be some of that harsh listening. And then you've got to forget about Tuesday, stroke Wednesday morning. You've just got to move on. And you've got the plan. You've got the plan for Cork, and the importance of 3 points against Cork, I think, for Waterford is huge, because if Sligo went on a run, you'd have a little look over your shoulder of your Waterford. So I think getting 3 points this week is massive for them. And it's sort of lucky it's early in the manager's tenure to have a result like that, because sometimes a long way back from them, like when you shift seven, sometimes managers never come back from that. So we're sort of lucky it's happened early in his tenure, and he learned a lot from his players this week.
Yeah, Jerry Nash in a similar situation as well, Gareth. Like, is there any hope for Cork City at this stage? Like, what are we looking at the standings here now with the league table?
5 points behind.
Yeah.
I mean, had they been 5 points behind Waterford, I think I would have given them a chance. I just think Sligo's recruitment has been strong. I said it before the transfer window. I think this transfer window, the business that's going to be done, will determine who goes down and who qualifies for Europe. I still think Shamrock Rovers will win the league. So I honestly think that had it have been Waterford in Sligo's position, there may have been a chance. But Waterford will be going down thinking another win to 30 points. I mean, that really puts a massive gap between themselves and Cork, and a decent gap against Sligo as well. I think Cork as well, listen, I know there's a bit of kind of unrest down there with the Dermot Oshur and the fans and stuff like that, but they've got to be realistic. The new manager's just in. We've seen it happening at Bowes. We've seen it happening at Derry. New manager needs to be given time, needs to be given enough time, enough support by the owner and the fans. So should it not work out for Cork this year, they've got to stick by the manager and give him enough time to get his own players in and get his philosophies and his ideas across.
Yeah, a couple of things on Cork, Steve, what to finish with is, the early concession of a goal, they're showing a lot of inexperience. A minute or two up in Dublin, just a heavy touch, and Harry Wood robs them, and they're 1-0 down after 2 or 3 minutes. The sending off as well is so harsh on Charlie Lyons. Like, nothing's been made of that in the media, because maybe, you know, to give Garrett a bit of credit, like the Dublin media or whatever, the rubbish people talk about. But that was really harsh. If a Dublin club had their player sent off for that same tackle, doesn't happen, and they were 2-1 in the game. They were getting back into it. Shells had gone off the boil a little bit in that second half, and I just thought that was really harsh on them. So a lot of the younger players we've seen in over the last number of weeks are making errors, and that's what happens with young players. And it's a difficult few weeks ahead for them, you would feel, and it looks like they're most likely going to, you know, either back to where to the fourth division, unfortunately.
Yeah, their centre back is it. That seems to be the weak area for this Cork City team. Like, they've got good attacking players, a couple of good centre midfielders. Greg Bulger back in the team as well, bringing so much experience to it. But it's those centre back positions, Vinny. I think that he really needs better options there.
Oh, 100%. He needs a centre half experience. Well, like I said, 2 minutes into the game in Daly Mount, and look, the game is played now by people passing the ball. Don't get me wrong. And well, don't take a chance after a minute or two. Anyone's coming to close you down. Away in Dublin, get it up the pitch and move on. And there's nothing wrong with that every so often. And no manager's going to criticise a player for doing that. Don't get me wrong, all the teams are passing out from the back now, and it's the way of playing. But with just a little bit of sloppiness after getting off the bus from Dublin, and then you're chasing the tail.
And do you think that, I mean, Vinny and Steve, surely that's put it down to a bit of naivety, not knowing the league and not knowing what it's like going to these grounds and how teams play against you. Jerry Nash, don't get me wrong, you can't keep forgiving him and expect something else, but if it keeps happening, but these are lessons that he's going to learn, and he's going to learn quick, and he will be a better manager for it. And if you keep seeing it happening, then there's a major, major red flag.
Yeah, he's still a young coach, Vinny, isn't he? Would you say he's learning on the job a bit still? Like,
yeah, so there's two things. Like, we spoke about Tiernan Lynch, and the key to some of Derry's success, and Gareth talking about finding patterns now, is he's been given time. albeit still short time. It's only into his fourth year. So Jared Nash needs time. Difference with Tiernan Lynch is he had a lot of first team experience with Larne. He had a very successful team. They won a league title. They've had ups and downs where coaching underage football is completely different. Everything is sunshine and roses, really. And it's a big learning curve for him. We all hope he passes. He's obviously got David Moylo with him again. Wealth of experience, but coaching underage players. And it is different to what they're doing now. So that decision to appoint him is going to, you know, has the potential to bite the owner in the backside potentially, or go the other way. So it's not easy for all involved, but they need a little bit more time. But they've got to learn very quickly that, you know, you've got to have your players right at it from the minute, particularly away from home. And, you know, okay to clear your lines. Don't need to take chances. This is not academy football anymore, lads. Get the ball away. And the easiest way, I'm not losing games, is don't concede goals in it. So.
Yeah. And I kind of feel for the supporters a bit, Gareth, as well, because it's almost like they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. Like, I completely understand where they're coming from with the ticket prices, the €25 ticket price, highest in the league. It's I can see why that would upset fans, and especially when they've just been promoted from the first division, for the ticket price to go up like that. And I can understand the owner might have some, you know, budgetary reasons for that particular aspect of the club over the last few months. But I can understand why it would anger fans, and I can understand why some fans would then stay away from the club. But it's a vicious circle then, isn't it? Because the club needs the supporters there to try and get this team out of the particular problem that they're in at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, who would become an owner? This is the problems that they have. But to me, it's all about supply and demand. I mean, you have a 7,500 seater stadium. If you're sitting there, you would rather it full at a €20 a pop than £25 a pop and have it half empty. And this is but he's right. He's trying to go into merchandise. He's going to try and go into retail. The amount of stuff that Dermot Usher has got right has kind of been undershadowed by the performances on the pitch. I think he's done a lot of good things. The ticket pricing obviously needs looked at. You can't keep burying your head in the sand and hoping the fans will come back. If the fans are speaking with their feet, you've got to engage with them. You've got to reach out to them and say, right, how do we make this work? But I agree, 25 steep. I mean, I think I thought the brandy oil was dear at £19. It's a
dear watch. Me language on this a little bit, Steve. The second city in this country, somebody's not doing something right. In the current League of Ireland, or the climate, everything is on the rise. Almost every club bar the odd one. And nobody's been able to galvanize Cork City. Something wrong. Understand results are part of that, and if they've got to get results on the pitch right, that would help. Something wrong in the current League of Ireland climate that Cork City is not being galvanised and being.
Yeah, John, I think actually St. Pat's might be a good club maybe to compare to, because St. Patrick's Athletic, they got a community officer in the club. The community officer put in a lot of hard yards, a lot of work. They went out dropping leaflets into houses around Inchicore, the surrounding areas. And as we see now at St. Pat's, and once or twice maybe they haven't sold out, but generally there's either a sellout or close to sellout St. Patrick's Athletic. Now, if they can do that, surely Cork City can do that. I'm also thinking about Bradford City at the moment over in England. I think they're in League Two at the moment. But I remember seeing an interview with their owner, who was a local fella, went in, and he's brought the ticket prices down to something ridiculous, like £15 or something, like whatever. But he was saying, like, and they're sold out every week. And he's saying, I would much rather sell the tickets at a knockdown price and have the stadium packed every week, cheering on the team, than charge more money that some people can't afford and having a lot of empty seats at the ground every week.
But not only that, Steve-O, you've got to have then extra revenue streams on merchandise, on teas and coffees, food, and you've got to have options in the ground. So if you take it from €25 to €20, you've got to work harder to get that extra €5 off the fans. The fans will spend it in the stadium if they feel that it's worth it. So it's about getting good food vendors, getting good access to teas and coffees and all these different things, jerseys, stores. You've got to be able to do it. If they're not in the stand, you can increase that revenue. So you've gone from 25 to zero. If you get them in at 25, you can get 25, €30 out of fans.
Yeah, yeah. But be under no illusion, Steve-O, and you support it, probably the best club at it. They've had a bit of bad news this week in terms of bad publicity. Balls, and to be fair, they've put their hand up and accepted responsibility for that, it looks like, and we all move on from it. But unless you're in the community now in League of Ireland, you're at nothing. You've got to get into the community. You've got to get people on board. You've got to get local skills on board. I see in my own area, Shamrock Rovers have been doing it for years. In one sense, they've been robbing nearly other people's fan base over in Lupin, where over Clondalk, and it should be St. Pat's. So the fan base, they've been over there in schools and local clubs. They're doing a brilliant job. Pats have done a brilliant job in their community. Bowls are doing an exceptional job. And what's happening down in Cork? Maybe we're too far removed from it, and part of that's happening. But if that was happening well enough, there'd be a lot more people in the ground, albeit ticket prices are absolutely too high, I get that. But something not right, and we need the second the second city's club bigger and stronger, and it will help League of Ireland if we get that right. So if they do go down, they've got to take the medicine, learn from this year and bounce back. There's no way Cork should be going up and down. Like, that's just Mickey Mouse, and they're too good for that.
Yeah,
I'm always a bit envious of the Shed End. It's a great great part of the ground as well.
Oh, I miss the Shed End, Steve. Yeah. I miss that.
The whole ground, though, like, it is one of the best in the country, and it is a shame that it's not being utilised to full effect. And look, you did mention the bowls. We won't go into too much detail. Obviously, it's a legal matter, so I don't want to be kind of stepping on any rakes here. But yeah, look, that involved Dave Henderson, the former Bohemians employee there, who went through the WRC to sort out an issue he had with the club. And look, at the club, as you said, they did come out and hold their hands up. They handled the whole thing, you might say, a little bit unprofessionally, and you would hope that they will learn lessons from this Bohemians, because it wasn't a great look for them. And Dave Henderson, it would seem from his quotes, is satisfied with the outcome and that kind of thing. So I'm sure people can go out and read about that story. I think John Fallon in the Examiner, Irish Examiner, had that story for us, so it's worth checking out and having a read. Let's finish on Bohemians and Galway United. That is our live game on Off the Ball this Friday night. It is on Off the Ball Sports Radio, so you'll need to download the Go Loud app to tune into that. I'll be alongside Richie Tell, the great Richie Tell, of course, former Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers player, will be with me on co-commentary duty. Superb player. One of the soundest fellas around, as you know yourself, Vinny. Bohemians Galway United. I was looking at Galway United's record, and look, you know.
Can I ask you a question first, Steve?
Yes.
Tell me, as a Bowls fan, would you be concerned, and this might sound, we felt for so long Bowls needed a centre forward. Right? You've got one.
Yeah.
But would you be concerned they played so well with the false nine that they come away from that a little bit?
I don't think so. I think he can play false nine as well. That's the thing about DJT. Yeah. He can play deep. He can go into the channel. So I think he can kind of fulfil that role as well. I think they were a little bit hampered. This sounds ridiculous now, but at Inchicore on Friday night, the wind was howling and it was blowing down away from the Inchicore end, and it was just mental. And every time Bohemians tried to hit a ball long to Douglas James Taylor, it was hanging up in the air. It affected Pats in the same way in the second half. Some of Anang's clearances were hanging up in the air, and there were. So look, first game in, you wouldn't be kind of judging them too much.
Who do you take out of your midfield then to accommodate? Because that midfield was so strong, whether it was Devoy obviously sitting at the base, but he's probably been Bowls best player all season.
I don't think him and McDonald change, Vinny, do they? Him and McDonald stay as they are, but it's up further forward. You're going to have like Clark, Rooney, Tierney, Douglas James Taylor, Connor Parsons, perhaps when he gets fit again. Like, those players are all going to be battling away for those four places, aren't they?
Yeah, so it goes back to Clark playing narrow off one side, what he was doing earlier on the season. That would be a little concern of mine, because I think they were so good the other way. So if you think of it, Devoy and McDonald probably stay in the team. McDonald gives him huge running power. Probably he's not as flashy to them. Ross Tierney stays in the team. So then there's little question marks about how he fits everyone. And he's got it really right over the last couple of weeks. But it will be interesting to see how tactically they evolve. If you go back to the best performance of anybody all season, it was them against Shamrock Rovers. They were exceptional on that day. And it was that sort of, it wasn't all false now, because Clark obviously led the line against them and put Rovers centre-halves under pressure. But there's already signs of a slight change. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops. I think bringing in centre forward is the right thing to do, and he's exceptional. But it is a little bit watch this space how Alan Reynolds deals with that tactically.
It's a great signing. There's no doubt about it. Young League of Ireland experience, experience in the league. What I would want to see, and just to touch on Vinny, is Mickelson and Dylan Rooney and Parsons. You've got to have one, if not two of them, and just purely running them behind. I know Tierney does a lot of it as well, but you've got to get people in behind because Douglas Taylor does drop off a good bit as well. He can play that false nine or that 10. He's skillful, he's talented enough. Get turned and then drive at him. But once they do that, they need players bombing further far past them, whether it's a fullback or a winger.
Yeah, and he needs to put pressure on Colin Whelan, I think, as well, because Colin Whelan, as we know, supremely talented footballer, and he had a great chance against St. Pat's and didn't take it towards the end. And even Douglas James Hayter had a chance in the first half as well, just kind of slightly leaning back, and he hit it first time and went over the bar. So, yeah, listen, I take your point, Vinny. I think there is it is going to be interesting. And look, Bohemians have hit it. They've kind of hit the... You know, they've got two draws in a row now. I think, you know, Reynolds came out for his post-match interviews after the game in Inchicore, and he was actually in quite buoyant mood. Like, he wasn't too downhearted. I think he was happy enough that his team maybe were outplayed for larger parts of the game, but they still managed to battle out for a point, which is maybe something... Well, not maybe. It's something Bowes couldn't do last season. Once they were under the cosh a bit, they generally lost those games. So they have definitely developed that way positively. I was going to start with Galway United because, you know, I was looking at their form on the road, Gareth, coming onto the podcast. They've got one clean sheet in their last 16 matches away from home. Like, that just isn't John Caulfield's type of team. You'd expect them to be a little bit better than that, or those stats be a little bit better.
Johanna and Ollie will be having sleepless nights listening to that, Steve-O. The only positive to the whole lot is they actually played well in Drogheda last week. They were very good in the first half, should have been one, if not two, up in difficult conditions, as you said. But then they're conceding on Galway-like goals. I mean, a long throw in, the ball bubbles about, and the young 19-year-old sticks it in the back of the net. So that will be of concern. But playing-wise, and getting into positions and creating chances, they're actually doing not too bad. So I wouldn't be overly worried about it. I think that's what John Coughlin and Ollie Horgan are masters at, are defensively getting it right. So I don't see that persisting, and I see them maybe going back to being more defensive. Like Tiernan Mitch had to do when they were going through a bad patch, Derry. He says, forget about scoring goals. We're just not going to lose games, and we're going to maybe nick a goal in the set piece or nick a goal for a mistake. So it doesn't look... And it doesn't look like a Galway team haven't conceded so many goals, but I think they'll be fine.
Surely Shaw's unlucky with the goal disallowed as well, Gareth. There hasn't been a lot of noise about that. He's behind the ball.
Yeah.
I don't know how. He's behind the ball and it's clipped back.
Yeah.
And it's a simple... And
that's after 4 minutes. I mean, the game just completely changes then. And by the way as well, see when the other concern, see when Drogheda in the second half, see when they went down to the back five, Galway didn't create anything. They did well in the first half, but and that's the problem with both those teams. If they go behind, they find it very difficult to go and get an equaliser or even possibly a one. But right. But I like Shaw. I thought he was lively during the game, Vinny.
Yeah. It looks like obviously he's not going to replace what they've lost, and almost guaranteed goals between now and the end of the season. But I think we've said all season Galway will probably lose two or three games, but they'll go and win three or four games, and some of them be big games and take big scalps, particularly at home. But it's a difficult spell for them. But you look at teams like Galway now, over the next month, they obviously won't play any of the European teams, so you would think they've got some winnable ties in their eyes, and it'd be an opportunity just to move back up the table into that sort of challenging for your position. So it's a big couple of weeks coming for a lot of them teams now. It's a real chance to make ground on everybody else, because Rovers, Pats and Shells obviously are off the radar for the next few weeks.
Yeah, they've got a good record at Dalymount Park as well. Galway United's last three meetings, they've had two wins and a draw. So they certainly won't be fearing a trip to Dalymount Park.
Was there a 5-4 there not that long ago, Stephen? A real late 4-3 a while back?
At Dalymount, so not the one I can recall. I'm just looking through the... Bowes beat got the last five goals, 5-0. That was back in 2009. No, nothing to that extent that I can recall.
No, but they do seem to get at them. They play a different way than Bowes have wanted. The sort of bigger pitch will allow set pieces become a bigger threat and Bowles will have to concentrate on them. But as I said, this is an opportunity for the likes of Bowles and Galway, both of them, to play teams in around them, for want of a better word, and a non-European team. So you've got to seize these moments over the next few weeks.
Great stuff, lads. Vinny, are you on your holidays? Are you away?
Not yet, Steve-O. No,
where are you heading off?
I'll be in the sun by this time tomorrow.
Oh, my God. Are you playing golf?
Oh, we will play a little bit, yeah.
Imagine that. Gareth, can you imagine...
Man's never off a golf course.
Can you imagine going on a holiday and wasting your time walking around a golf course for 3 hours? Bloody hell.
Hey, and he does it 4 days a week at home as well. That man does nothing else.
Imagine
phone call.
Imagine working hard, Gareth, and wasting all your money on an Oasis ticket to stand there with 40,000 people with their camera phone up above your head.
Good ones. I thought you were going to say an expensive Cork City ticket.
Dynamic pricing. Don't give them that idea. I can't afford an Oasis ticket. I'm waiting for our friends up in the GAA maybe to give us a shout out there. But anyway, let's move on, lads. It's been brilliant as ever this week. Hope you enjoy the games wherever you're heading, folks, and we will chat to you on the LOI podcast.
Happy birthday, Steve-O.
Chat to you next week.
Enjoy.
Good luck.
The League of Ireland pod.
On Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the refreshingly alcohol-free Rockshore 00. Get the facts. Be drink aware. Visit drinkaware.ie.